imagine other people, and particularly in 1948,
it was difficult, Kai.
Very difficult. And very
that had nothing to do with color. There are a lot of people who had problems with that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, the one thing, too, and Faye said we're going to do this for half an hour, it seems important to me that you obviously had talent. You're in the Hall of Fame because you're a ball player. We need to talk about, you know, if you were doing a scouting report on yourself in your prime in the major leagues, talk about your baseball career, and also the positives, because you're not a bitter guy, and I know from the historical perspective we're talking.
Was it Dandridge? Jimmy Dandridge? No, Ray Dandridge.
Ray Dandridge.
The outfielder.
He was a little bitter.
The outfielder was wonderful, and he, I can't remember his name, he died.
You're not Henry Kimball?
No. Not Crutchfield.
Jimmy Wakefield. Yeah,
no, Crutchfield.
Crutchfield.
Was
yeah.
it Jimmy Crutchfield?
Jimmy Crutchfield.
I spoke to him at some length.
Yeah.
Wonderful guy.
Great guy.
And he gave me the great line. I said to him, "What are you proud of?" He said, "I'm proud of the fact that I was never bitter." Good line. I'll ask you about that.
Okay.
You guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the reaction of some of the big names in baseball. I mean, you were an outfielder in 48. You run to the outfield. You go by DiMaggio every time. Did DiMaggio ever say anything to you? What was your relationship with him?
No, he never said anything to
me. How about Dominic?
Dominic said to me, congratulations. Ted Williams said congratulations. And there was a fellow who played first base for the Red Sox at that time named Rudy York. He was one of the other people. Now, I'm talking about in 48 when I was playing regularly, because, you know, at that time, you left your glove on the field. So when you go by DiMaggio, you go by Williams there.
How about Hank Greenberg? He'd been through a lot.
Hank was my general manager.
But in 48?
No, yeah. Well, he was playing in Pittsburgh in 48,
yeah,
I think, so or 47.
He'd left Detroit by then, so you didn't see much.
Well, you know, he'd been one of the persons that had been very kind to Jackie.
Yeah.
Because I remember when Bombshoman trip we were on, and Hank was the general manager, and he was talking about Hank was one of the guys that was nice to him when he first broke in. And the other thing is that what kind of general manager he was. And I said, well, he's cheap. He won't give up any of that money.
Now, how about guys like Mickey Vernon? He's in Washington. You knew him in the Army. Did he say to you, good luck, I hope you do well? I mean, how were
yeah,
those guys?
When we played Washington, yeah. He and I was together for a whole year and a half in the Navy. So we got to know each other very well.
So he must have been happy for you.
Yeah, he was. He just hoped that I'd been able to come with the Senators. And same thing with Billy Goodman, who played with Boston. You know, we'd been on the island together, and they were happy to, you know, to see me in the major leagues. And they all wished me good luck.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there were some guys who gave you some real encouragement from the other teams. There were obviously some who were pretty bad. But, you know, talk to me about 48 and how you managed during that year. You took a lot of abuse, but some guys gave you a little support.
I think one of the good things about 48 as far as taking the abuse...
Whose phone is that?
They'll call back.
Someone on the desk over there.
Yeah. One of the good things, Faye, about the abuse that I took was that...
Hey, Mr. Bill, Benny, no problem about that Joe Torre bull. I'll call you maybe this evening or tomorrow. We'll get together Saturday. Maybe I'll meet you over at that card show that you're doing, and I'll have the ball for you then. All right, hope everybody's well. I'll speak to you later on. Bye-bye.
Give me the question again now, Mr.
Talking about 48 and the abuse you took, how did you deal with it? How did you respond to it? And who helped you? I know Hegan and Gordon were still there. They were helping you. But
yeah, and a coach by the name of Bill McKechnie. But I think, you know, when you're going through that type of situation, you can't wait to get to the ballpark, because this is where whatever you're feeling, you kind of you have to forget about it.
And you were having a good year. I mean, you obviously playing well.
I was having a very good year in 48. Matter of fact, I had a good spring, and there was a team in Toronto, which was a farm club of the Philadelphia Athletics at that time, Connie Mack, who was managing athletics. That's where I was supposed to go for my training, because in America, I mean, well, in this country, you couldn't. The AAA club Cleveland had was in Birmingham, Alabama, so at that time it was mixed. So I was going to go to Toronto, but I had a good spring, so they decided to bring me on the Major League Ball Club.
That must have made you feel good, the fact that you were having you could hit and.
I felt good in the spring. I had a good spring, and then of course I thought it's amazing. I thought that I was just going to go from Newark Eagles to the Cleveland Indians and play. I never thought too much about, you know, the minor leagues, because where I came from was good baseball, and I had produced well in that league, not thinking that Jack came from Kansas City to Montreal to the Dodgers. So I just thought when I left Newark in 47, that I was going to play every day, but I didn't. And then when I went to spring training, I never went to spring training thinking that I was going to go to the minor leagues. I went to spring training thinking I'm going to be on this ball
club. Plus, you're playing a different position, because you're learning
playing
center field, and Cleveland Stadium's a big center field.
Yeah, but you know, Trish Speaker, who was a coach at Cleveland at the time, who was a great outfield.
Maybe the greatest.
Yeah, the one thing he said to me, he said, speed means a lot, and I was fortunate enough to have speed. And then arm strength, and I was fortunate enough to have arm strength, although I've been a second baseman, you know. And I never gave much thought to the idea of playing the outfield, that I couldn't play the outfield. You know, it's sort of similar to when you're a kid playing in the streets. You don't play one position. You know, you played everywhere. Even do some pitching. And when I was in high school, of course, I played every position in high school but the outfield and catching and pitching. I played first base, second base, shortstop, and third base. My first year, freshman year, I played third base. Then the next year, he moved me to shortstop. The next year, he moved me to second base. And the third year, my last year, he moved me to first base. But I never played the outfield before anywhere.
Now, who did you have trouble hitting in 48? I mean, who got you out?
Reynolds, Al Reynolds.
Fastball?
Yep, high fastball, moving fastball up. And you know, it's a funny thing, he used to get me out and laugh. He'd smile, you know. So I sat there one day, I said, you're going to get old. And sure enough, he got old, I caught up with him.
How about left-handed, low pat?
Low pat, I can use pretty good. You know, the funny thing, whenever I was around low pat, he would talk about, you know, the Cleveland hitters and how you got him out. He never mentioned me because I hit it pretty well. I had success against him. I had good success against Whitey. And Rashi, but Reynolds was the guy that was tough on me. You know, I think one of the things that helped me as far as left-hand and right is concerned, I played every day against all pitching. So I was adjusted to, you know, there are some pretty good left-handers in the Negro Leagues that I played against.
If you were going to pitch to you, how would you do it?
Up and in, fastball up and in. No breaking balls. No fastballs out over the plate. Of course, everybody likes the ball out over the plate. But I'd pitch up and in. But you see what happened with Reynolds, how I got to hit him later on, is he did get a little age, but then I moved back off the plate a little bit. So that ball that was up and in was out over the plate more.
Once you got your position settled, you obviously built a Hall of Fame career. What would your scouting report on Larry Doby be? What did you bring to the team? What made you a special player?
What did I bring to the team? I think I brought, number one, an understanding of people in terms of being able to judge me as an individual I think I brought an ability to be part of a winner. I think that I brought a type of situation to the team that you can teach or discipline your kids by and not do it from a hearsay, do it from a contacts type situation, and that people are different. That people are different.
How about in baseball terms? I mean, talk about you as a baseball player. I mean, obviously the players must have, as you started to play well, did they warm up to you? And
oh, yeah.
Some got closer to you. And the guys who were negative, Vet got rid of some of them. There must have been a few left.
There were some left, but, you know, they were smart enough to know that this person can help me make more money.
You were helping them to win a pennant, and in fact, you won the pennant.
And you know that it didn't bother me because I make myself money too. So I'm not going to not do what I can do because you know what your thoughts might be.
So where'd they put you in the batting order? You started to hit.
Three. I batted three for the rest. 48. I batted second for a while, and then in 49 he put me in number three spot, and I stayed in number three spot the whole time that even when I got traded to Chicago. But you know, when we start saying how they looked at me after they found out I could play, I think a lot of them look at me not only as a person that had athletic ability and that could play, but as a person who was a human being like they were. That the color didn't make a difference as far as attitude, and personality, and character, and all that. It's just a thing that I had that a lot of people have. So the one thing that I think that I always say athletics can bring people closer together than most things is that you can judge as to whether you can depend on a person to do certain. In baseball, you depend on each other. And it has nothing to do with nationality. It first of all, the strength of the person who has what it means as far as what sacrificing means. And there are a lot of things in the game of baseball that can come about that can be used in life to help you as a person. And you know, one of the things I think that's important as far as baseball is concerned and as far as athletics are concerned, in particular baseball, is that there are people in the stands that can make a judgment of an individual from a distance. And there are people surround you that make a judgment of the person. And you can help that person that you come in contact with that make that judgment from a distance and maybe not the right judgment. In other words, I may not like the way you walk, or I don't like the way he does this. You know, like it's like O'Neill with the Yanks. You know, he's kind of a person that enthusiastic, you know, aggressive, you know, and he'll knock the water cooler, kick the water pool. Well, that doesn't make him a bad person, but somebody may judge him as a hothead or whatever it may be. That's the part of a person who has failed to do what he would like to do or what he should do, and you have to get it out of your system somehow. He shows it only more in emotional type than a lot of people. A lot of people, you see, I've always thought that one of the toughest things for me in baseball when I first got there was that I had to strike out and walk back calmly. That, you know, that that is not a true me. I want to kick the goal, I want to do everything.
Did you have the same kind of understanding that Jackie had, that after a certain amount of time you could let it go a little more?
I did.
But not,
I
mean, not in 48, probably.
I did it in 55. I began to kick water coolers, but you know, it was just a thing. Now people just took took for granted. That was part of the game.
Larry, talk about the best day of 48. I mean, you look back on it, it was a great year. You win the World Series. Bearden has a terrific time. Talk about what's the nicest day? What's the great day of that year that you remember?
I have to go back to the World Series.
The home run?
Home run. I mean, you know, Faye and Claire, one of the fortunate things, and I thank God that I left the ball club in 46 that won a World Series. And then 2 years later, I'm on another ball club that wins a World Series.
Well, you hit the home run.
And that was one of the bright spots, one of the good that you don't remember, don't forget. But the one thing about the World Series in 48, and I can say this and say it truthfully, I've always been treated very, very good by Cleveland fans. I cannot say one moment that I was mistreated by Cleveland fans. They were always good to me. You know, in the beginning, they were kind of quiet, you know. But as the years went on, I would get standing ovation like anybody else as far as that ball club was concerned. So that, you know, and the other thing about Cleveland is that we go back and look at the history, and Cleveland was one of the 10 cities in the United States that had showed progress as far as integration is concerned. You see, in 46, before I got there, you had a Marion Motley and a Bill Willis and a Horace Gillen playing football.
For the Cleveland Browns,
okay?
And they were winning championships.
Yeah, and then you had a guy that way back in 36 that won the Olympics, Jesse Owens. So you had the makings of me coming to Cleveland because you've had Afro-Americans involved in athletics in the town before that. So I think that's one thing that helped me a lot to be welcome on that. I was welcomed more by the fans than I was by some of the people that I played with.
But now you win the World Series and there's a big celebration in the clubhouse and you're a rookie and you hit the home run. Tell me what that felt like and what the other players must have said to you.
One of the great things about that is that there was a fellow by the name of Steve Gomek that he pitched, and I hit the home run to win the game. And we embraced each other. And it wasn't an embracement where it was orchestrated or planned. It was just two happy people. And if you look at the smile of the two people, there was no such thing as a planned thing, or there's no such thing as a Hollywood thing. It's a thing of a joy, of a happy moment in our lives that we had been able to accomplish.
And you got to make the point for the historians, he was white.
Yeah.
And obviously, and he's winning the game. And the
and he also got more problems with it at back home where he lived than I got from where I lived.
Because that's a photo that was sent around the world, right?
Yeah. And his minister said to him, he was having some problems in his town about why are you hugging that so-and-so. So his minister, he told me that his minister said to him that he would have did more than that if I had hit a home run for him to win a ball game. And I thought that was a nice gesture.
Is that one of the great memories of your career?
That was one of the great moments of my career. Now, you know, first of all, you have to say signing a contract. But the contract was something different from being in the World Series, hitting a home run to win the game. Certainly by signing a contract puts you in that position. But you don't think about the contract like you think about that particular moment in your life as far as hitting a home run to
win. Was there any self-consciousness in terms of race after that World Series? I mean, were you thinking to yourself, I've showed people or my people can be proud of me? None of that.
I never thought of myself as, I know I represent a race, but I never put myself in a position to think race. You see, Commissioner, I was brought up thinking people. Certainly, I know I'm of Afro-American descent. I know that, you know. But I've never, my parents have never taught me in terms of identification, in terms of thinking about a special thing like a race.
But my point is, you weren't saying to yourself, I've now proved to all those guys that call me all those names.
I never said that to myself because I knew I could play. Yeah. There was never any doubt in my mind that I couldn't play baseball. Now, maybe if I had a fail, you know, But I don't think, I've never thought about failing. Because number one, it's hard to think about failing, particularly in baseball, when you played it all your life and you played with people that were older, and you're always good enough to play with people that were older. So when you say, was there any doubt in your mind about, no, never, never, I never doubt. The saddest.
I don't think Jackie ever had a moment either.
No, no, I don't think he could. I don't think you could. I think if you doubt for yourself for one moment, I don't think you would have been successful.
Because you got to give the people credit who made the picks. I mean, Vec obviously knew
you can't,
that you were the right
guy. You see,
guy.
I've said this to you before. You cannot imagine the courage that Mr. Ricky, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Vec, and myself had to be involved in that kind of situation. Because we're talking about before President Truman integrated the Army.
But think of what would have happened if the two of you had failed. My point is, they picked the right guys.
If we had failed, I think it would have been another 50 years maybe. Oh, well, no, I don't think so. I think the Civil Rights Movement might have made some changes, I think. I mean, because it did make a lot of changes as far as equal opportunity is concerned. So maybe that would have, I mean, Dr. King's situation, I think that might have changed. But if that hadn't happened, then it would have been a long, long time before
Larry, baseball integrates. It's obviously success. You look at Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, down the line. The Negro Leagues slowly fade away, but there's a Negro League stamp on the major leagues, isn't it? How did the Negro League players help change the major leagues?
How did the Negro League players
help change the nature of the way the game
well,
was?
Well, number one, I think the change that came about is that it's been a proven fact that you can play baseball. I mean, when people say, well, certainly you'll be successful in the Negro League, but you can't be successful in the major leagues, that's been proven not to be true. The other thing is important, maybe before proving it, is that you got the opportunity to prove it. It also proves that opportunities are supposed to be given to every person who qualifies or who has the ability. Baseball being the All-American game certainly became the All-American game in 1947. You couldn't say baseball the All-American game before 1947.
But Larry, what about the argument that the National League integrated more aggressively, more black guys went in the National League? I remember Musial said to me, once Jackie and Larry came in, the Cardinals were finished. Because they didn't have any black players. And he said, we couldn't compete. So he said, the National League, we were finished as a competitor. And, you know, you look at the record after 46, because the Dodgers were heavily changed.
I'm not too sure that this is based on the social aspects as far as the National League moving ahead of American League as far as Afro-Americans are concerned, but I think it does have some effects as far as the truism is concerned that the American League may have been somewhat slow terms of integrating.
Look at the
because the Yanks were winning most of the pennants. The All-Star game was being won by the American League mostly. So that means that, in my opinion, that means that maybe the slowness as far as Afro-Americans are concerned was not needed as much as it was in the National League. That could be socially, that could be the people who own ball clubs didn't feel that they were ready for that kind of situation. And if you are kind of the underdog, or if you kind of the low one on the totem pole, like the National League was, if you compare World Series and All-Star games, then you're going to try to make your situation better. So the thing is, you get the Willie Mays and the Aarons and the Banks and all these guys over there. And the thing was, they could play. You know, there's no question they could play.
But so, wasn't there also a difference in the style? Didn't the nature of the game change with the stolen bases, the speed, a more aggressive tone
Jack,
on the bases?
I think Jack brought a difference for his speed concerns, his stealing bases. And I think that, you know, if you look at the American League base on power mostly. You know, on my ball club, nobody ran. You know, we had Gordon, we had Boudreau, and those kind of guys. And then and the Yanks, you know, maybe Rizzuto or a few guys, but it was almost power. So when these guys come to the National League, they change the whole aspect as far as the stealing bases is concerned or quickness is concerned. I think Jack had a lot to do with that because, you know, he steal bases or steal home and that kind of situation. And you, when, you know, one of the things about the game of baseball, I think that brings a certain amount of color to it, is when a guy steals a base. You know, it brings color, plus it gets most people in involved. You know, like when I always said that the baseball going out of the ballpark excite a female. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't excite a male, but it excites a female because it's action and everybody gets up and they clap and they do this and they do that. So ladies are really involved in that. The guy can strike out the side. The lady is not going to be, they ain't going to move too much. I mean, it doesn't seem to be the same kind of excitement. I'm not saying it's not, but they will clap and applaud when a ball go out the ballpark quicker than it would if the guy strikes out the side. It seems to me that it's a non-interest or non-important or non-type of thing that they don't grasp. I'm not saying anything about being dumb or anything like that, but the difference is something is going out of the ballpark, you know, and this guy is running around the bases, you know, and they're giving him an applause.
Can I have a timeout? I think I would like to suggest we.